When you don't go to Geico.com, car insurance can be confusing. Like Swedish techno confusing.
Bark, bark, meow, meow. Dance with me, purple cow. Bark, bark, meow, meow. Ooh, you lovely cow.
Geico makes it easy. With 24/7 access, all you have to do is go to Geico.com and you could save money on car insurance. It just makes sense. Unlike, you know.
Dance with me, purple cow. I like your moves.
Priestess and the Cauldron, a podcast featuring Elvira Love and Phoenix LaFay, two out-of-the-room closet professional witches with over 70 years combined experience of making magic. This is a show on the LMC Radio Network. During each show, Elvira and Phoenix will help you create rituals, make spells, make potions, and much more besides. They'll spend time speaking about different goddesses from all over the world, paying attention to the ancient reverence of long-ago cultures and infusing it with a modern perspective. Elvira, Phoenix, take it away.
Well, hello.
Hello there. And here we are.
Here we are.
The day before we are going to go to the Mystic Fair.
Sort of.
Yeah, this is pre-recorded.
It's a very confusing day for us, I think, because we're pre-recording a couple of shows. It is October, so it's the busiest time of the year for us witches. And in order to be able to do all of the things, we had to pre-record a couple of shows.
So we are starting with the show that would be literally Friday, which is technically tomorrow.
Right.
So with that, we will talk about the chalice.
The chalice. Yay.
Yay. I would ask you how your week went, but it'll get redundant if we do this twice for two different shows.
So we can make something up for the second check-in.
That's true. That's true. Been a busy week. Busy week for me, busy week for, you know, getting the show ready, getting the shows ready, getting the Mystic Fair ready.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's pretty much a synopsis. Nothing dramatic, just a lot of stuff.
Yeah. I realized this morning as I was taking a shower that I have a lot more to do before the Mystic Fair Saturday morning than I realized. And Milk and Honey, we make some spiritual products. So we make baths and sprays and incenses that are all dedicated to specific goddesses. It's something I love to do because it's creative and I get to play with herbs and oils and salts, and I love all of that stuff. But it also takes a lot of work because we make them in small batches, and we actually sing songs and say prayers and call upon the goddesses that we're working with. For example, we do a whole line of love products that are infused with Aphrodite energy.
Mm.
And I need to make some for the store. Right? But I also need to make some for the Mystic Fair. So I have a lot of product to make over the next 2 days to get ready. So that will be tonight and tomorrow. I'll be working my little witch fingers to the bone.
Well, I understand that. I understand prepping for fairs, and luckily I don't have product to make.
Right.
Just have to get the things that you need to be sure everything is in the right space and they're all functioning. And
right.
You know.
Well, and it's a lot of work to be a reader at a show. You know, because you are, you don't know who you're going to be talking to.
That's true.
You don't know who's going to come up to you for a reading, and sometimes it can be back to back to back to back to back with very little space in between, and it's exhausting.
Yep. And you have to make sure you have food stashed away with liquid as well. Yeah. Every once in a while, you'll have to run to the bathroom.
Right.
Reader not available.
Right. Self-care.
Self-care. So, obviously, I will be stationed actually behind Lucky Mojo's booth and, of course, across from you on the other aisle. So, I will have all my buds hanging around, so it will be fun and very busy and very taxing, but very worth it, and it's a great fair. So
yeah, it's going to be fun.
It'll be fun, and you'll come out. We're going to be there from 10 to 5, both Saturday and Sunday.
Right. That's Hall in Santa Rosa.
And we're going to have, they're going to have belly dancers, and they're going to have all kinds of wonderful vendors. And I believe they have a 3D booth that they're doing some very neat show that it's getting edited. They also have, I think, Dogs for Diabetics is the charity that is part of this whole thing.
Nice.
So we have a really good group, and
yes,
we will hopefully see you there if you're local or visiting us.
Yeah, fly in. It's not too late.
Hell no. You know, a couple of days. Really great.
Yeah.
Really great.
Good.
So, Chalice.
Let's see. We have done shows on the Athame and the Wand. So we've covered the element and the tool of fire and air and the confusion
that therein goes in.
Those two things, right?
Yes.
And now we come to the chalice and water.
Mm-hmm.
And thankfully, and kind of obviously, there really isn't any other element. The chalice and water, that just makes sense.
Yeah, it is. It holds something, usually libation, liquid, you know, it's a drinking tool.
Yes.
So it is very obvious. And it is considered a passive weapon or passive tool.
Right.
Since it is not, as we've discussed with the Athame and the Wand, the more masculine slash aggressive, you know, direction. I am directing my energy.
Right, right. This the chalice receives.
And holds. And holds.
Yeah.
Somewhat like a womb, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's part of the correspondence and mystery of the chalice, is that it is the womb.
Mm-hmm.
It is, it holds the fluids.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, depending on your tradition, it may be wine or it may be grape juice or it may be whiskey or whatever.
Right.
Depending on the ritual you're doing.
Right.
But especially with wine, that is, you know, it's a very, for those who may have a Christian background, it's very the blood of Christ,
mm-hmm.
you know, the red wine and the blood. And it's a reminder of the blood in our own bodies and our own fluids. And mm-hmm. even if water is in your chalice, we are, what, 86, 89, some crazy number percent water?
Exactly.
So no matter what is in that cup, it is a representation of our own body fluid.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And obviously the flow of our bodily fluids, but also the flow of the energy. So it needs a container, water needs a container, mm-hmm. and yet it also flows. So I think that looking at the means that this presents us with, it can be out of many different elements, clay, metal, crystal,
mm-hmm. Glass or
glass,
ceramic.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think in that way, it may also represent different aspects. I was reading up on some of this, and, you know, people have many different goblets or chalices for different purposes and different energies. I kind of hang out with one. I obviously made an altar here with several, but, you know, there's usually one that is very important to me, and that's the one that I use. So I would say at this point, it has the aspects of the subconscious,
mm-hmm.
the psychic abilities. Sometimes people will even use it without necessarily being a bowl for scrying. It can be used for scrying as well.
And there is some crossover between a goblet or a chalice and a bowl.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are, I don't think that there is that much difference between a bowl being a chalice and a cup being a chalice,
mm-hmm.
or a goblet being a chalice.
Mm-hmm.
They all receive, they all hold, they're all vessels.
Right.
And there's lots of traditions, like in the Celtic tradition, and that the word, I just tried to look it up. I have my computer up here. I just tried to look it up. I think it's a quaish, which it's a Gaelic word, so it's probably spelled, you know, like S-O-M-E or something.
Right.
Ridiculous, but it's pronounced quaish. I'm pretty sure that's how it's pronounced. But it is, it's a Celtic bowl, and it's most often made out of metal, and it has some sort of design in the bottom of the bowl, and then it has two little handles. I'm making hand gestures here for Elvira.
Yes.
You all can see what I'm doing.
Of course.
And with the quaish, this is something that the Sisterhood of Avalon does,
mm-hmm.
and I know a lot of other Druid or Avalonian systems do
mm-hmm.
the same process.
Mm-hmm.
But you send the quaish around before you start your ritual, and everyone says a blessing or an offering or something that they have gratitude for and drinks from the vessel and then passes it around.
Mm-hmm.
And this is that idea of sharing libation.
Right.
Is pretty universal, I think, in pagan traditions, either before the ritual begins as an offering or even like a grounding and centering type process.
Right.
Or towards the end of the ritual as like cakes and ale or celebration or another form of blessing, a closing blessing or benediction.
Well, that tends to make you realize that it's a way of uniting, and the liquid unites.
Yeah.
And that's, again, the feminine of the uniting, the circle, the feminine. And
Right. Obviously
chalices have a circular sphere-like
mm-hmm.
Bowl that they use, whether it's a bowl or it's a stemmed sphere bowl.
Right.
So
right.
I know that and we will probably hit that a little later, but in the church, they actually have a prescribed height
mm-hmm.
of the bowl that it has to be, the diameter, the stem, the little foot, the pedestal that it sits on, the little foot. I mean, they have like, it is like within millimeters.
How interesting.
And I was,
I know that.
I didn't either. And when I started looking at the combinations, as we will know, of what the Eucharist and the libations that we as pagans and witches utilize, it's like there is obviously a similarity. So I was looking at that, but then I went and researched a little more, and I thought, oh my gosh, look at this. They have you. I mean, it's immediate. You can't go higher or lower or any of it.
I wonder when and why those requirements were developed.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And who deemed... And now the sacred goblet must be 2.5 inches, no more or no less. Like who did that and why? What was the purpose?
I would say that, you know, regulation is everything, right? You know, regulate, very masculine about putting structure in.
Right. So yeah. Part of I've been through the Reclaiming Tradition initiation, and that is not a requirement in the Reclaiming Tradition. You do not have to go through initiation to call yourself a Reclaiming Witch.
Mm-hmm.
The initiation process in Reclaiming is very personal. So you take on this process if you decide you're ready and you want to take another level of commitment into the Reclaiming Tradition. So,
okay.
So blah, 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 long story short.
Mm-hmm.
One of my initiators in this process had me work with my own magical tools. And I was given specific homework
mm-hmm.
on working with different tools and doing different things with them and really having almost a beginner's mind, because by the time I went through my initiation, I'd been practicing witchcraft for about 15 years at that point.
Right.
So, you know, starting fresh and being able to look at your tools as if you've never looked at them before is really refreshing, and it really helps you to remember why they're magical and important.
Right.
And
right.
One of the things I was charged with was to get a chalice, and not like the fancy goblet that I have on my altar, but just a cup that I really thought was pretty
mm-hmm.
And is usable. You know, sometimes if you get a really fancy chalice, especially some metal ones, drinking out of them
right.
is gross.
Right.
So I was challenged to find a vessel that I really thought was beautiful and to drink my morning coffee out of it,
mm-hmm.
and to have that process be magical and to imbue that coffee or take my vitamins for the day or whatever using that normal vessel,
mm-hmm.
and remembering that it was a magical object and imbibing magically every
mm-hmm.
morning.
Mm-hmm.
And it was revolutionary. It was a revolutionary practice.
Wow.
So I highly encourage folks who may have had a goblet or a chalice for a million years or maybe are new to this whole concept, just find a cup that you like and seems magical to you and use it every day. Don't just put it up on an altar and wait for the full moon.
Right.
Use it every day.
Right. Interesting. You take that a little bit into the mundane world. A lot of us, I will be the first to say, have a special mug
right.
for coffee. The one that I have is actually about 28 years old,
mm-hmm.
and it was when my most sacred cat passed, and I found this mug that has a cat at the handle that looked identical to my cat.
Nice.
So that mug has been my sacred vessel
yeah.
for 28 years, and that's an interesting thought to notice that we do that unconsciously.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I have a sacred mug, too. I got it at PantheaCon many years ago, and it's ceramic, and
mm-hmm.
it's handmade, and it's, I don't know what the process is of the putting color on clay. I
mm-hmm.
can't remember what that's called. But it was done in a way, it's a plain clay ceramic, and then there's a blue band around the middle of it with the cycle of the moon
Ooh.
Made into the dye or
mm-hmm.
what is that stuff called?
I
can't remember.
Glazing.
There
I
we
think.
Go. The,
okay.
the glaze.
See, I'm
Thank
not even
you.
A potter.
But the moon shapes are put into the glaze so that you see the ceramic underneath.
Right.
So it's really simple and beautiful. And the handle actually has broken off of it. It was a cool, intricate, like spirally handle.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't care. I still use it. It's great. It's my favorite cup.
Yeah.
No one else in the house is allowed to use it.
I totally understand
yeah.
that one.
They get the wrath.
The wrath
of Phoenix when they use my free.
Not a good thing, fire. Mm-mm, not good. Oh, well. So, obviously, the goblet, the chalice,
yes.
is a modern tool as much as it is an ancient tool. They
yes.
used to do it in gourds, the original obvious things. They didn't have clay and firing and all the rest of it, or metal and soldering and,
mm-hmm.
you know, that. So they used gourds. And that became the first of what was passed around as the sacred vessel.
Right. And really across traditions, and you know, most of my heart and my ancestry is Celtic and Norse. So I know a lot more about those traditions than some of the other traditions
mm-hmm,
across the
mm-hmm.
world. But really, this is pretty universal concept, the idea of hosting
right.
and guesting
mm-hmm.
and what a sacred thing it is to be a host for someone
uh-huh.
and breaking bread and sharing a beverage with someone and sharing
uh-huh.
a drink and sharing a cup is a huge deal. And if someone came into your home or came into your village and they were offered food or drink, they were now part of your clan and you were responsible for them.
Right.
It's a really big deal to share food and drink with someone. And that is also this, you know, I'm going to get kind of binary masculine-feminine here for a second, which I don't necessarily like to do. But if we look at traditional roles,
uh-huh.
in modern times, this hasn't been true historically, but in modern times, it is the woman's, the housewife's job
right.
to keep the home clean, to make dinner, to have beautiful table settings, to be the hostess,
uh-huh.
right? So this has become a feminine thing. It was not necessarily like that thousands of years ago. It was much more universal and it was a shared concept. But you can see, again, going back to that feminine energy around the cup, it's no wonder
mm-hmm.
that has sort of become the domain of the modern woman. And
right.
even that's changing as we go modern.
Right.
There is
even
no necessarily one domain.
No, and everybody, you know, guys, open up a bottle of beer. Here, have some beer. The
yeah.
sacred, you know,
yeah.
that's a container.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a sharing. It's
absolutely.
Just... We do it as part of our way to bring the person into our family.
Yes. Yes.
And I think that is the how we do it in every day, how we do it in sacred space, or how we do it when we do ritual for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
It is then when we use these specific specific items that we have dedicated to a process.
Right.
And I know that, for instance, even in the Hermetic tradition, they have their actual rituals and using the chalice is a little bit more structured, as I read, as to Christianity's Eucharist. I think that it followed into that. It does have, obviously, the overtones of the god, the goddess, the great rite, the process. So for what we're looking at, it's seeing the universality as much as doing it in terms of just what we do, what we say, how we think.
Right. Right. There's also this process in several different traditions of drinking in something that's been charged.
Uh-huh.
So this can be something, some magical brew, an elixir, a special potion that you've made,
uh-huh.
or it can be something as simple as water. There is this process in the fairy tradition that they call the kala, right?
Uh-huh.
And doing kala, and it is it's a Hawaiian word, kala, K-A-L-A, and it means to loosen or untie. And it's a very simple ritual. You get a glass of water, and that's it. And you just go through this process where you basically imbue that cup with good energy. And in the fairy tradition, there's a very specific energy that you use. But you imbue it, you pray over it, you put positive energy into it. You feel, you just charge the heck out of that water.
Right.
And then you drink it. And you feel all of that charge, all of that goodness, all of that prayer that you've put into the water, it flow into you. And I don't, this is a terrible analogy, but if you've ever been super drunk, and the next morning when you're really hungover and you are crazy dehydrated and you drink water for the first time and you can literally feel it touching every cell inside of your body,
mm-hmm.
that's kind of what kala can feel like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's you're not only drinking the water, which is nourishing to our body, but you're drinking this prayer, and you can feel it infiltrate your cells.
Yeah.
So it's a really cool process, and it's super easy. And I believe, because I'm not a fairy practitioner, but I am, you know, the reclaiming tradition is like a cousin of fairy,
mm-hmm.
and I have lots of beloveds who are part of the fairy tradition. But I believe this is part of the daily practice of being a fairy practitioner. Like, this
really?
Is something you're supposed to do every day, which makes sense. I mean, it's good.
Well, I think it is.
Yeah.
I think that there are things that we need to consider doing that bring us closer to spirit in the simple practices we do every day. I know that every one of us have either coffee or tea or, you know, juice that we start our day with.
Mm-hmm.
And if we were to look at that as we were just discussing about our sacred coffee mugs, we look at it that way, I think that kind of process would start us out on a different path daily.
Yeah.
And I know that most of us don't have time, and most of us are spent, you know, rushing hither and yon, as you and I have experienced this week, and obviously much more. But I begin to think that that is just one little area we can do to start making something special.
Yes.
Even though we have such a busy schedule and we talk about all these wonderful things in the more intellectual side, but I think making it practical.
Mm-hmm.
And I know we talk about that at the end of the show, but I think this is mm-hmm. a different kind of show, so
yeah.
we can kind of wander a little bit here.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this is on our list of topics for future shows,
mm-hmm.
but daily practice, it's something.
Yes.
You know, and it's hard. It's like going to the gym or any other thing that you need to do that's good for you.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, or remembering to drink enough water. You know, these are simple concepts, and they're vital. Mm-hmm. And having a daily practice as a pagan, as a witch, as a goddess worshiper,
right.
however you want to title yourself, having a daily practice is imperative. And the chalice
mm-hmm.
and drinking and using this as a magical tool is so easy
yes.
because it's something we do anyway.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I know that for me, listening to you talk about, you know, doing this sacredness and making that cellular connection to the liquid that is entering your body is, I think, very important, and it makes us very conscious.
Yeah.
And that's the feminine principle. It's receptive, but it's very conscious.
Right.
And we look at the things that we're doing here and talking about, well, this is when this happened and this is when this happened. That is for a lot of reasons that we want to share the knowledge, but the thing that I think we want to share most is about really getting into experiencing and being part of the process as opposed to observing it.
Right. Right. And there is something about water specifically, you know, the thing that the chalice holds. Mm-hmm. Water does absorb energy. This is scientifically proven, right?
Right.
We have Dr. Emoto.
Emoto, right? Yes.
Who did all of these studies on the type of energy that was given to water, and even just saying words to it, playing, and this is done with plants too, playing certain kinds of music.
Yes.
You know, plants are made of water just like human beings for the most part, you know. Mm-hmm. So you can see if you can change the molecular structure of water.
Right.
By simply singing to it or saying love, 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 love over and over again or playing a beautiful piece of music or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then you drink that in. You're not just drinking the water. You're drinking that energy.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like if I was a super mundane muggly muggle, that might sound crazy, but this is scientifically proven shit.
Exactly.
Right?
It's interesting you talk about that. I actually have a large container that I have charged with specific Emoto put out cards, and they had different crystalline patterns on it from, you know, snowflakes, and then they did certain words on it. And I got really into that for a very long time, especially when my husband was sick and we were trying to charge the waters for his health that he could drink. But I've kept doing that.
Yeah.
And I find it fascinating that you brought that up, and it was in my mind. I wanted to say it, but you caught me first.
Yeah.
So I applaud that. And it really does work.
Yeah.
It really does work.
Absolutely. And water is life. And, you know, there's a lot going on in our world right now, too, where we need to remember that. And, you know, we're kind of going on going on this little water tangent. But liquid and water and the chalice are completely connected. You know, that their energies are the same.
Mm-hmm.
And water is life, and there's a huge thing going on in our world right now with the Dakota Pipeline and fracking and all of these things that are destroying the water of the planet. It is not a resource that we can get back. There's only a finite amount of water on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
It recycles itself, but if you poison it, the recycling process isn't going to solve the poisoning.
No,
and
this is another part of what I think we as witches and priestesses are about. We're activists in our own right, doing things for the process of life, period. And it's not about ownership or this being mine or that being yours and I, you know, blah, 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 the lines. It's this is a fully fledged experience. This is all about the earth.
Right.
And we happen to be aware of that and saying things about it, and other people are suddenly having things happen to their world where, for instance, you know, the fracking causes gas, which you turn on your water and you get fire.
Right.
Which is, you know,
of the implications of that magically.
I know.
You know.
I was thinking as I was saying this, I was going, the fire.
Yeah.
And yet again, that's, you know, in its own right, that's a purification, but we don't need that to try and drink it,
right?
You know, or not have it to drink,
right? And if you take that chalice, that sacred vessel, and you pray over the water, and you take that into your body, and you're taking that prayer into your body, you're also taking that prayer out into the world. It's blessing all of the water,
right?
You know, because let's be real. Let's be gross for a second. You're going to drink the water, and then what's going to happen? You're going to pee.
Right.
And you're going to flush that pee down the toilet, or you're going to go outside and pee on a tree or whatever.
Right.
And then whether it goes into the toilet and the sewer system or it goes into your backyard, it's now returning to the earth.
Right.
And it's going to go through the whole process of what water goes through. So no matter what, that prayer, that blessing, that sacred water that you put into your sacred vessel works its way back to the earth.
Exactly.
So that prayer doesn't go away. Energy doesn't go away.
Mm-hmm.
It will continue.
It's because it neither can be destroyed. It just changes form.
Exactly.
And I think that when we see that, we understand and we work with it, we live with it,
right.
We pray with it, we do the things, whether it's I really need more money to pay my electric bill,
mm-hmm.
or having more money and being able to give it to someone who needs it.
To pay their electric bill.
It's the energy, and I'm using money because it is something we talk about and think about and people pray about,
yeah.
because there's this, you know, sense of scarcity, and we have to go through the concept of abundance, and that's what a vessel is about.
Yeah.
It's abundance.
Right.
And I know fear takes us away from that consciousness, and we need to go into a better version of openness, because
yeah.
that's what I think the turning point and what we do when we share cakes and ale is we share abundance.
Yes. Yeah.
See?
May you never hunger.
May you never hunger. May
right.
you never thirst.
Right. Right.
And those are very important words, not just something to say.
Absolutely.
And,
absolutely. Yeah.
You know, this is where we function. Obviously, the part of the chalice that we're talking about is more than just a tool. It's an actuality.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, women
right.
are the vessel. Our
right.
womb is the vessel. And
right.
that is where it started from. And that is why we take the chalice and utilize it.
Right.
As a
yeah.
representation of life.
And maybe this is because I am a woman. I'm female identified, and I am super into menstruation and womb stuff, and I talk about bleeding all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's why. Mm-hmm. But I feel like the chalice of all the magical implements is the most potent. It's the most usable.
Mm-hmm.
It's the one that can be folded into everyday life the most easily.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I feel like the chalice is beyond a ritual implement. It's so much bigger and more important.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that womb concept, we all have a pelvic bowl, whether we have a womb or not. We all have a pelvic bowl.
Exactly.
And that bowl holds our body. That bowl holds our guts. That bowl holds us
mm-hmm.
as a human being.
Mm-hmm.
That's the sacred chalice of our body.
Mm-hmm.
But womb or not, you know, that is a sacred chalice of our body. And from a Wicca witchcraft perspective, that goblet represents that pole, the bowl.
The bowl.
If you say bowl too many times in a row, it starts to sound really weird.
Yeah.
And that cup. And then, you know, there's the concept of the great rite,
mm-hmm.
where you take the athame and you put it into the chalice. And you have the coming together of the polarity.
Right.
Right?
Right. Which, again, is another one of those masculine-feminine joinings.
Yes.
And so as much as we do it in a symbolic way, it can also be done in a real world way.
Sure.
But that's a time for a talk for another time.
Right.
But really what we do here is we honor
mm-hmm.
and share in that generosity of life.
Right.
And I think that in its right, when we, you know, are back again, we will. There's the Holy Grail, which, you know, we'll talk about. I think the quest and what that is, the representation, both physically and metaphorically.
Right.
And then, of course, I just want to get into the concept of where it went from Roman times into the Christianity of the blood of Christ.
Right.
I mean, that to me is, it's not bad. It's not. I don't have an attitude with it. I find the fascination of the similarities and how things flow, the commonality, rather than you are mine and you don't have the right to hat and you don't have the right to this.
Right.
We were the original ones and, you know.
Right. And the reality is, we will get into this more deeply, but that magical chalice comes from many cultures.
Yes, it does. It's kind of like it's a big universal process and nobody has the right yes. to it.
I definitely do not want to bash Christianity because it's a beautiful faith and a beautiful tradition, but they definitely were good in the early days of figuring out, oh, that's really good, and people are really attached to that. We'll just fold that in.
Yeah. Well, I mean, how do you get people to follow you?
Right.
You learn what they do it now, for heaven's sakes. We have it everywhere we turn in this world, this culture, the modern world. Is you start talking to something that you notice they want, they have, and then you fold it into your
right.
work, your
right.
You know, whatever it is you're talking about, or your advertising, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I guess that's part of growth, isn't it?
Sure.
I mean, and without judging it,
right.
it is actually part of growth, because growth is about assimilation
right.
of things to make something new and different.
Sure, sure. Just, I suppose it depends on your goal.
Yes.
Right? Is it world domination?
Right.
Or is it coming together?
Right. And that, I think, that goes back to focus. That
right.
goes back to intent. And if you want to take over, then, of course, you're going to have to assimilate things to get people to come to you.
Right.
You know, that is a, you can try killing them, but there is a certain point where assimilating it the other way is easier.
Sure.
But I think for both of us, we have a perspective of what we honor and what is ours as a feeling content.
Right.
But we also understand other people's place in what they feel is their center of being.
Right.
So I think we've really, I would tell you at this point, we've wandered all over the map here, which is good because water flows all over the place.
So we have to expect the core elements of what we're talking about to come through and the way that they're going to come through.
Right, right.
The way it goes.
I know that for the sake of those people that said, well, what else is there to know about it? You know, I would tell you that there is probably a lot more than we can put in any one given statement.
Right.
So, I mean, it's been known as the cup can symbolize receptivity. It's also likened to the cauldron. And so that is another part we will talk about in another show.
Right.
Which, of course, is that. So
yeah.
We're ready for break.
Time for a break.
You're listening to The Witch, The Priestess, and The Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Stay tuned, as more magic is coming your way right after these messages.
The LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Roof Hour with Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman Ali, Sundays 3 to 4:30, Candela's Corner with Candelo Cambisa and Michael Carell, Mondays 5 to 7, The Crystal Silence League Hour with John St. Germain, Tuesdays 5 to 6, In the Streets with Beverly Smith, Tuesdays 6 to 7, Fit and Foxy with Madame Nadia and Jaya Danya, Wednesdays 6 to 7, The Now You Know Show with Professor Charles Porterfield, Thursdays 6 to 7:30, The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Phoenix LeFay, Fridays 6 to 7, and Liquid Libations with Andrea Weston, Saturdays 5 to 7, all times Pacific, at 3 hours for Eastern, sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at LuckyMojo.com.
We're back!
We're back.
Oh my gosh, here we are. So, since we've wandered over the map, let's kind of go back and see how we can bring a little bit of structure, oh dear, a container, to what we want to go with for this half. I know that we thought, as we said, the Holy Grail
mm-hmm.
and the Christian Eucharist.
Mm-hmm.
So what are your thoughts upon this?
Well, you know, as I said a little earlier, a lot of my context comes from Celt and myth from the Norse. So the Holy Grail is often connected to King Arthur. And King Arthur may or may not have been an actual person, but stories of King Arthur come from a much older story, a collection of Welsh tales called the Mabinogion.
Mm-hmm.
And they're one of the stories in the Mabinogion, because it is a collection of stories, and some of them were added later and blah, blah, blah. And they were translated by monks, so, you know, you have to take all that into consideration, too. But King Arthur is kind of a minor character in the Mabinogion and in the tales of the Mabinogion, but there is this process of searching for the chalice, but not just the chalice. There's actually many sacred implements that Arthur and his gang of rebels go in search of.
Right.
There's a plate, a platter. There's a cauldron. There's a spear. There's a specific animal. There's so many things. I can't remember them all. But this is a very old story that was once an oral tale that was told. And it's interesting that it's grown and developed and transformed and changed and become this thing that a war was fought over to go and try and find this cup that became Christian iconography that who knows where it originated from.
Right.
But the base, the pieces, the seeds of this story are from so many other cultures.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And it's because the Romans, I think, kind of got into taking things on.
Romans.
Yes, those Romans, you know how they are. They tend to take, and theirs was, I think they called it calyx, C-A-L-I-X.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, it was a drinking vessel, and I think with a, you know, that was where you got the stem and the bowl and the little pedestal, and it could sit in a specific way on the table so it had a certain balance. And
right.
I think from that was where the Christianity took the stem and the bowl,
right.
And they had simple ways of seeing it, but then it became more.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, it sort of grew into what we now know as the actual goblet that they use.
And what's interesting is how this vessel, which is so feminine and womb-centric, all of a sudden becomes the vessel that holds the blood of Christ.
Right.
And now it is something that represents patriarchal energy. It's this masculine energy, even though it's in this feminine vessel, it's now about Christ.
Right. Right.
And we're divorced from it because you have to come and accept the blood of Christ. It's not already part of you.
Right.
You have to drink it in order to be connected to it.
Right. It was interesting. There was a article that I read, and I took a lot of notes on, but it was about this particular witch. He was also Catholic, and which is kind of interesting. And he wrote a whole article on the similarities of Christianity and witchcraft. That they are not separate.
No,
and they are actually identical in many, many ways, and there are things that represent what the, you know, how they do that. And obviously we go to primitive times of sacrifice. I mean, think of what the tradition of the king being one with the land was. Actually, at one point, went out and made love to the land. He didn't, you know, he didn't do it to a female that represented the land.
Right.
And becoming one with the land. And, of course, the chalice and the grail and that whole thing. But then you talk about the Eucharist of holding the blood. Again, it goes back to, excuse me, but I need you to help me get to where I'm going.
Right. Well, and it's a simple, it's a story of how vital and important fertility is to us as a species. You know, if things don't grow, if animals don't have babies, if chickens don't lay eggs, if human beings don't have babies, we can't continue.
Right.
And honoring our connection between ourselves and the land, and have, you know, when the king is supposed to be wed to the land and connected to the land and makes love to the land, that is honoring that representation that he may be our ruler, but even he has to give offering to the earth. Even
right.
he has to be connected to the earth. And if it goes sideways, he's going to hang for it, literally, you know. His blood will be spilled to fix it.
Right. Which is, you know, primitive and conscious of that connection. We've just sort of taken it farther and farther away, but it still has that background.
Right.
And whether it's religion or political structures, kings, queens, whatever, I think we use that, but yeah. It's still the connection to the feminine.
Right.
Whether or not, I mean, if we divorce ourselves from being able to connect with that feminine, i.e. scientifically creating life without,
mm-hmm.
I feel that we will divorce ourselves from humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And if they want robots without thought or feeling in its truest sense, we create them in that form.
Yeah.
If it goes too far.
Sure. Well, I mean, and you can say, you know, it's funny you say if we divorce ourselves, because those are the exact words that I was that were rolling around in my head. Because I think, sadly, maybe even the majority of us are divorced from the land,
mm-hmm.
especially in the United States. You know, I can't, and maybe even in the Western world, I could even stretch it to that. But, you know, we know that we need the land to grow food so that we can eat stuff. But how many people actually have had their hands in that cycle, mm-hmm. you know? And even fewer, I bet, people have seen the cycle of slaughtering an animal that is going to be your steak dinner.
Right.
And the more we divorce ourselves from that process and forget that we are also one of those creatures, an animal, you know,
mm-hmm.
the further we get removed from this, the sacred of mm-hmm. the planet. And I think that's why there is so much fracking and war and destruction, because we don't value other human beings. We don't value the planet as sacred.
Right.
You know,
it's life. Life. We value life. We value our life. We value the life of our little grouping, mm-hmm. but we don't value life.
Right.
And I'm not, you know, there is the honoring of the body and the feminine body as its own right.
Right.
To decide what we will do with it. And that is honoring the feminine. And mm-hmm. that part, when we started stepping away from that, we started going into dishonoring.
Right.
A myriad of things,
right?
Because that part was taken away, and somebody else said, "You have to do it this way."
Right, right. Yeah, you have to do it this way.
You have to do it this way.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But that, you know, and yet if you don't think of it in a political sense, but you think of the actual ritual
mm-hmm.
of breaking bread and having libation.
Mm-hmm.
And the Eucharist is that. It's
right.
designed in that format, but because if you take it from the blood of Christ, but you take it to the Last Supper.
Right. Well, right. That's where it originated.
That's where it originated.
Right. Right. And there you go, back to those older, small village concepts of breaking bread and sharing a meal. And, you know, the Last Supper has become... It was the final party, right, of
right.
Jesus. And
right.
I don't have Christian background, so if I'm wrong, please correct me. But there, it was the final party before he becomes the sacrifice.
Exactly.
And he breaks bread with his most trusted and beloved, even knowing that he can't actually trust all of the people he's breaking bread with.
Right.
But he brings this cup. And really, it's from that moment, assuming that that moment happened, that this cup took on a modern symbol of power,
mm-hmm.
even though the roots of that symbology are much older.
Right. But, again, it went from, I mean, if I take my sacred water bottle and yep. use this, and we create something for a particular situation as the same thing, that water bottle will become the sacred vessel,
right.
i.e. similar to the goblet, the chalice,
right.
the cup.
Right.
It is a focus,
mm-hmm.
and it becomes a focus of many things. That one is taken down one road.
Right.
We, as witches, have taken it and kept going in a different way,
right.
similar but not identical.
Right. Right.
So I know that I look at things and I go, this is important as a common ground, not as a separate ground. I don't like it when I exclude people, and I'm human, so obviously that can happen, as much as I don't like to have people exclude me because
right.
I am from something different.
Right.
I just figure I want the common ground, the basis where we have that feminine energy of inclusiveness as you do putting water in a goblet.
Right.
With a container.
Right.
And,
right.
Or liquid libation.
Right. And at some point we have this chalice of Jesus that becomes the Holy Grail.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes this symbol of all things good.
Right.
Of all things, of reaching the ultimate connection to God.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some interesting old stories, especially in the Mabinogion,
mm-hmm.
Where there's this, in one story it's of Rhiannon and Manawydan, who Manawydan is the Welsh god of the sea. Rhiannon is a goddess from the other world, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, they go on adventures together.
Mm-hmm.
And Rhiannon and her son end up coming into this great castle, and there's a huge bowl suspended from the ceiling, and they are both so drawn to this magnificent chalice, and they touch it, and they get sucked into the other world.
Ooh.
So there's lots of stories of these magical goblets, these holy grails, this symbology of this cup,
mm-hmm.
being able to take you into another realm, being able to connect you. And that goes back to that womb concept,
mm-hmm.
you know, the womb tomb, right?
Yep.
We come from the womb, and when we die, we go into the tomb. And those two things are... they're the doorways, the gateways, they're the beginning and the ending, they're the same.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So we have that concept of Sheila Nagig,
mm-hmm.
you know, the doorway, the opening of the vulva,
mm-hmm.
the entryway.
Mm-hmm.
And that's that chalice energy.
Right.
Yeah.
Sorry, this is a bad joke, a womb with a view.
Ha, ha, ha.
We have a view. We're Janice. We can see the either direction.
There you go.
Okay.
All the directions.
I wove that in poorly, but I did.
Yeah. And in some tales of King Arthur,
mm-hmm.
the holy relics, there are more, like I think I mentioned this a minute
yeah.
ago, but there's more than just the cup. And in order to really be connected to the other world, the God realm,
mm-hmm.
you have to have all four of them.
Right.
And they are connected to the elements of earth, air, fire, and water. How ironic.
I know. Imagine that.
Right? Yeah.
But see, that again, we balance, 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 balance. That's what we are looking at. We are taking individual items, talking excessively about them, but when you look at the fact they are all part of a pattern.
Right.
And that pattern is about balance.
Yeah.
And we stand in the center because the center is spirit, and we connect with spirit because of what it is. So whatever tool we are using and how we do it,
right,
is again, where we come from, where we go to. I know that we talk about blood and life and
yes.
goblets and containers, and it really makes me realize that, no, here we go again. We are just a drop in the bucket,
right,
of all of this.
Right.
We are part, but we are not part. We are separate, but we are whole. And
mm-hmm.
Each time you do a ritual, each time you do something with intent, you connect.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about, I mean, how many people go around hanging out with their athame on the side of their build? I know some places people do that.
Sure.
You know, there's, you know, and they have their Swiss Army knife.
Yeah, stuff. Right, or your kitchen knife.
Or your
whatever.
Kitchen knife.
Yeah.
But it's not one of those tools that you readily people
yeah.
accept out there
right.
as your thing. The
right.
goblet is, you know, your drinking cup, your mug that you have your coffee
yeah.
in, your water container.
Right.
These are things that walk with you consistently because we have become,
right.
that's what we
right.
do.
There is no other tool connected to witchcraft, in my very humble opinion,
mm-hmm.
that can be as stealth
yes.
and hidden out in the open
mm-hmm.
as the chalice or the magical cup. Like, because
mm-hmm.
you know, you said your water bottle, right?
Yeah.
So many, especially young people, are using like a mason jar
mm-hmm.
as their water bottle now.
Oh, wow.
You know, and so they're carrying around this mason jar because it's recyclable
mm-hmm.
and easy to clean and it's
mm-hmm.
not polluting the environment and all that good stuff. And it's inexpensive.
Mm-hmm.
But a mason jar is a great magical chalice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's easy, it's simple, it's there, and you can carry it around and have your water in it and be drinking from it all day and put your tea or your coffee or whatever you need in it,
right.
And no one is going to even question,
right?
Oh, what's that weird cup you're carrying around? No, it's just your water bottle.
Right.
All you need is to, you know, we've talked about cleansing and consecrating tools before.
Mm-hmm.
Just do a little ritual to make this a sacred item and to honor that it's sacred, and you're not going to take it for granted, and you're not going to just leave it lying around. It has a sacred value to you.
Right.
And every time you drink it and all day long when you're carrying it around, you're honoring that connection and you're honoring the wisdom of what that vessel can bring to you.
Right.
You can be super stealth and have it out in the world and no one will even know.
And then again, there is the other potential. This is a thought that you were talking that just came to me. I know a lot of us that do go out and get our paper cups of coffee or tea or whatever, which are recyclable, et cetera.
Yeah.
But when we're drinking out of them, we can add a blessing.
Mm-hmm.
Holding that, we can not just bless the fact that we have our caffeine in our hand, but that this is a container that holds a liquid that we are honoring as we put into our body.
Right. And if you go to Starbucks, they might write your name on the cup.
That's even more
right?
personal.
So add a pentagram or a heart or whatever.
Right.
You know, just by drawing a symbol on your cup, you are changing the energetics of that cup.
Which goes back to Dr. Emoto because that's exactly what he talks about.
Yeah.
And not only do you say it, but you can place symbols or words on to your liquid to charge it.
Yeah. I mean, an easy thing you could do to make your sacred vessel every vessel,
yes,
is to get one of those hot holder doodads that you put around your coffee
cup. Oh, yeah.
You don't burn your hand.
Yeah.
You know? You can get those that are made of cloth or that are reusable.
Mm-hmm.
So get one of those and sew the word love into it or blessings or abundance or whatever.
Right.
And just put that sleeve around anything you're drinking out of. And there you go. You've added a blessing to every beverage.
Exactly.
You know, I'm passionate about the chalice because I feel like it's an underused but highly available magical tool.
Because it's not glitzy. You
right.
don't run around with the wand,
right.
you know, the Harry
right.
Potter wand with the feathers and things, and
yeah.
the unicorn strings and all
right.
in it. Or the athame, which is very, you know, masculine, but it also
yeah.
has got that blade and everything.
Yeah.
And if you're walking around with a cup, hey, man, that cup's really cool.
It's a whip.
Power, yeah. You know, it doesn't signify anything.
Yeah.
I think of that as yes, you know, in even during the burning times, if you were caught with a chalice, you were automatically taken away as a witch.
Mm.
That was the one thing that they did not.
Right. Well, because who could afford a fancy cup?
Exactly.
Nobody. Right. So if you had a fancy cup, there was something to be suspicious about.
Yeah. So they were very, 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 very obvious that we would go to something like a gourd.
Yeah.
Or a drinking horn.
Yeah.
Because those, though they were the original ones, everything kind of went up, but then they had to bring it back down and go under the, you know, do under the wire stuff.
Right.
So
we have about 2 minutes left.
Oh, my gosh.
So there, I'm sure we'll have a couple of closing things to say about the magical cup, but I just wanted to say, you know, again, this is a pre-recorded show, so it'll be airing on Friday the 14th of October, 2016.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, yay.
Woohoo.
And next week's show, which will be airing on Friday the 21st, is going to be on charlatans and fakes and things to be cautious of
in the metaphysical and spiritual world.
There you go. Perfect.
That's it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Which, again, will be pre-recorded.
Yes. Yeah.
But you will be happy to know that we will certainly have many more jokes and things to say.
Oh, the jokes never end.
Around here.
I was born and raised a smartass.
All right. Well, and somewhere along the line, I got tagged as the goddess of mirth, so I'm right there with you. But so come out and see us at the fair. We will be there in all our finery and all our glory.
Yeah.
And it will look like it's actually going to rain. Bye.
Bye. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Witch, The Priestess, and The Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Our podcast airs live every Friday at 6 p.m. Pacific and will be available for download. Questions or comments on this show or ideas for upcoming shows can be sent to our website, and that's at www.witchpriestesscauldron.com. Again, that's witchpriestesscauldron.com. On behalf of Elvira, Phoenix, Alan, and myself, Gwion Raven, a big merry meet and merry part and merry meet again. Blessed be.